everyone, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I am Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe, and this week, Devendra is traveling. He is doing some meetings and briefings. So I have the pleasure of introducing right now a very special treat, our guest co-host, the amazing Alex Kranz. Woo!
What's up, y'all? I had to remember how to podcast. It's been a little minute.
Just a little minute. Joining us on the show today to talk about our topic of the week is Engadget's very own leader of commerce, commerce queen, the woman who knows exactly how to shop. It is Valentina Palladino. Hey, Val, Valentina.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I always love to come on the podcast.
Are you recovered from Black Friday?
Barely enough to be here.
Are we ever? This week, we are going to talk not about Black Friday or Cyber Monday, but all about the Kindle Scribe 2. The reviews were published this week. What I've got up on Engadget.com is a review in progress because I haven't had that much time with it, really. I got a little screwed up by deliveries. We're also going to dive into some other news. There was some news in the land of Intel this week. Also, all of our Spotify Wrapped or music recaps were released this week as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But as always, if you're enjoying the show, please make sure you subscribe to the Engadget podcast on your podcast catcher of choice. Leave us a review wherever you're listening. And if you have any feedback about the show, feel free to email them to podcast@engadget.com. We usually live stream the recording of this show on the Engadget YouTube channel at about 10:45 a.m. Eastern. We're just not doing it right now because Devendra is the live stream genius for us right now. And as he is traveling, we're only doing an audio-only version this week, but we should be back soon.
No one can tell, but Sherlyn was looking like... She looked like fairly
maybe
confident.
Very ominous sounding intro there. Okay, so moving on to the Kindle Scribe 2 and all manner of e-reader, e-writing tablets. I'm so excited to have both of you here, not only because we have a history, the three of us specifically, but also because the two of
that
you
got
are
salacious.
Such, I know. You know I love to get salacious, Alex. The three of us... Well, the two of you specifically have such a rich, like, knowledge of this space. I mean, Alex, I consider you, like, the foremost authority on e-writing, writer, ooh, e-reader tablets. And Valentina, I swear to God, if she's not the foremost authority like you are, then she is, like, right up there. She just doesn't display it on socials like you do.
That's not true. Val reads
oh, no,
so
Valentina
much.
Reads a lot. And
I do read. I don't put it on social anymore.
Exactly.
Because I'm not on social.
I loved it, though, when you were on Instagram. And every
yes.
week I'd be like, "How is yeah. what is Val reading and how is she
a
reading
it?" That was a long time ago. That was such a long time ago. Now social has become just, it's too much for me.
I know.
It's too much.
We talked about this last week, actually, on the Engadget podcast. If y'all want to listen, not specifically the two of you, Alex and Valentina, but everyone else listening, last week's episode was about how we... recent developments in social media and how our relationship with it has changed. It was me and Jess Condit. It was a lovely episode. So, Alex, I know you've had an opportunity to play with the Kindle Scribe 2. Can you tell me, like, what you thought about it as an expert?
I liked it. I think what was really surprised me about it was that it wasn't a remarkable clone.
It was or wasn't? Sorry.
Wasn't a remarkable clone.
Okay.
It didn't feel as like it was copying Remarkable as much as it has in previous years. Mm. It really felt like it was finding its own identity mm-hmm. as this device that is a pretty good note taker, a pretty good e-reader, and a hell of a way to mark up all of your documents.
Okay. We'll get to that in a bit because I don't like the way we do that. And I can see Valentina doesn't either because Valentina will tell me all about how the Kobo version will do better. But
or something else.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this before we came on. I have a general hot take.
I can't wait.
I can save.
Is it that marginalia is bad and we shouldn't be encouraging people to write in books? That's the daughter of a librarian in me. Sorry.
Oh my God. I was also a former librarian. Anyway. Alex, tell me what you mean by not copying the Remarkable. Do you mean specifically in like the Gen 2 version is finding its own aesthetic and also that the AI features don't seem to be something that Remarkable has done and therefore it's not copying or?
Well, the Remarkable is basically out to recreate writing in a notebook. That's what the Remarkable does. And it does it so well.
Remarkably
it manages to be like, what if you're like, really fancy notebook you got from Papier last week. I don't know what you're talking about. I could actually upload everything to the internet. You could see your notes. You could interact with them in different ways. And that's what's really, really nice about The Remarkable is it's like, okay, I can get that pen and paper experience and digitize it really seamlessly. Mm-hmm. Whereas the Kindle Scribe is like, I hear you like to read. I hear you like to take notes. Mm-hmm. I hear you're one of those people who's super into marginalia. Here you go. And it's cheaper than like the Remarkable Paper Pro, right?
Mm-hmm,
like,
yes.
It's
but that's color.
Less, yeah, it's less expensive. And it is got like just a different vibe to the aesthetic of the outside is different, right? Like it's got that nice green. I sincerely dug the green.
Yeah. It's pretty.
I don't know if you guys did. Yeah, it was nice. I was just like, oh, a pop of color. It just felt more like a consumer product, whereas the paper, the Paper Pro and the Paper 2 and everything feel like those are for adults sitting in a boardroom or sitting in like one of their nice library in their mm-hmm. house.
Let me, before we go too deep into our various hot takes, talk about what the Kindle Scribe 2 is and what is new about it. So, for those who are at this point listening in the show and still don't know what we're talking about
Amazon's- Oh, I should explain it. Yeah, I got you.
You got it? Amazon. All right, Alex, take it away.
I'm so excited. I haven't been podcasting.
I love it. Go for it.
Guys, I'm so excited. Okay, so Amazon had released a whole bunch of new Kindles this year. We got color Kindles, which I finally got to play with one the other day, and it's fine. If you like go get a Kobo
Valentina Libra. Reviewed it for us.
I think Val would also be like, just go get the Kobo it's Libra fine. Color.
It's fine. Get the Kobo Libra color. Correct.
Yeah. but the big thing was the Scribe. And the Scribe, I feel, is where you're starting to see Panos Panay as the new head yep. of like all hardware at Amazon. He oversees the team that oversees the Kindle. And you could really start to see his impact. I don't think it's like... This has been entirely handmade by this man. I think we're going to see more Panos Panay-like products in the future. But you could see how Kindle and Amazon was thinking about this as an actual product and not simply as a venue to sell ebooks, which is what the Kindle usually is. Instead, this is a thing that you – it's 10.3 inches.
10.2, yeah. E-ink,
yeah. 10.2-inch display, e-ink, black and white e-ink display that you can write in on, that you can draw on, and that you can read all of your books, and that if you really, really want to, if you're that kind of freak, you can go in and you can just add notes. You can add notes in the middle of a paragraph. You can add notes at the end. You can mark things up and send those notes to other people. Like, and you could do all of that. And a lot of people have tried to do that in the past. We've seen that with Sony has tried to make that a lot with their e-ink products.
I forget they did, yeah.
I know. They've been doing it longer than anybody else, but they haven't been doing it well. Like the EC-430,
yeah,
like you know, it's one of those.
Names, yes.
Yeah. And Amazon is in the space, and they are the king of the e-ink space in the United States. Nobody mm-hmm. does it. Like them.
Mm-hmm.
People do it better, but nobody does yeah. it like them.
I was gonna bring up Panos too, because the Kindle Scribe, he's the first person, I think, to publicly claim it as a 2-in-1, because he loves that term. According to him, it is a 2-in-1, which I think it makes it a slightly more unique proposition than the Remarkable, because it does do reading and writing well.
Just reading way better reading than better. The Remarkable. Right? Like,
well, Valentina, I was going to say, I can see
you
churning.
Are we getting into hot takes? Because
please, go. Please. You know like that other space so well. Go.
So my hot take is... take this with somewhat of a grain of salt, because I unfortunately have not had the chance to try out the Scribe
sure.
2. I have used the original Scribe, just not the Scribe 2, but a bunch of other, you know, e-ink tablets from books, Supernote, Kobo, etc. So my hot take is that it is more challenging for an e-reader to also be a good writing tablet
mm-hmm.
than it is for a writing tablet to also be a good e-reader.
That's true.
So it's when we were working on your review in progress share, I found myself and I said to you, I was like, this sounds quite disappointing.
Yeah.
Because I think it sounds like it is primarily an e-reader like Alex, to your point, that can also do some note stuff, which is great for people who need it and want it. But it's not going to necessarily, or it seems like it's not at the point where it can really compete with anything that is actually designed to be a writing tablet. Whereas a writing tablet, like any books device, for example, let's say, is also a really good e-reader, because for plenty of reasons, but to be a good e-reader, you need, I think people buy e-readers in particular to have as much convenience as possible and access to all of the things that they want to read, be it PDFs, library of whatever ebooks that you might have from any other, any source, whatever. So if that's the primary reason that you're getting an e-reader, I feel like that is more easily achievable on a tablet that's also primarily for writing.
Right, because reading is just...
there's just not...
you know. Just needs to display text well and then flip pages fast and then like...
let you customize it, let you adjust the text so you could read better or more easily, or, you know, whatever accessibility issues that you might have.
The paper, the Remarkable is terrible at it. like the reading.
I would disagree.
Oh, at reading?
I would disagree. I mean, so it's not an e-reader, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But you can get reading material onto it, but it is primarily a writing tablet, because I think people put the reading material onto a Remarkable because they also want to write on it.
Yeah.
Or also want to interact with it in a, like, scribble note-taking way. Yes, it doesn't have, you know, like, the library access that you would get from a Kobo or a Kindle, but you can get multiple sources of reading content, any type of content that you want on it.
Yeah, I just think that, like, the reading experience, like the layout, the UI, how you navigate a book on a Remarkable is horrible, and it's that's fine. And, you know, Remarkable, you go talk to anybody over there and they'll say, yeah, we don't care, like, this product was made for writing. This isn't a reading device, this is a writing device. And that's the real key difference between this and what Kobo's doing, like with the Libre Color, which you can take notes in, but it's a much smaller display. And I, Val and I may fight about this, but I wouldn't recommend it for taking notes. And the Kindle Scribe too, which is like, I think it does, like, it sacrifices a lot for reading. It sacrifices a lot for writing, and all in the service of making something that is pretty good at doing both. And I think it's feels like the most consumer friendly one of these products I've seen so far. Like, most people I know who say, I like to read, but every once in a while I want to take a note, or I want to tell somebody they suck in a note they sent me, but handwrite that they suck in the margin of that note. What should I get? I would say get a Scribe. I think the Scribe is, like, really solid for most people. But I think if you're looking for note taking, get a Remarkable. If you're looking for just that really, really good reading and writing experience, prepare for the frustration, but get a Books. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. But there's so much frustration with a Books. And the Scribe, there isn't really that frustration. It just works. But it's very limited in what it can do.
I describe Books devices as, like, they're best for people who just love tech.
Yeah.
Who love to tinker around with mm-hmm. things. Like, mm-hmm. My dad is a great example. My dad.
Your dad's bought every.
My dad has, like... yeah. So many e-readers, so many, like, he has an iPad mini, he loves his tiny tablets, you know, in all shapes and colors and sizes. So, like, he has a Books and he loves the Books. Like, when he first got his first one, he was just like, this is great, love this thing, you know. But he loves tech, he loves to play around with that stuff. So if you're just looking for something that's very convenient and out of the box, like, ready to go, a Books device probably is not for you.
Yeah, I would buy a Books for my brother. I would not buy a Books for, like, most of the other people in my family. So,
we know each other very well, the three of us, and that's why, and to be clear, the three of us used to work together at other publications, and that's why we all know each other. I will also say that this reminds me or brings up a point. So I know someone's personally that's shopping for a Kindle Scribe for someone on their holiday list, and shout out to that person who's listening right now, code word Homefirth. But they were reading my review in progress, and we don't really, I think, have full reviews up on the other competing tablets, but I really wanted to know your take, Valentina, on the Kobo itself, because we heard about Alex's defense, strong defense of the Kindle Scribe, as well as why the Books is based on both of your perspectives, more for a specific audience. But Valentina, is the Kobo a better buy than the Scribe?
I have to go back and look at the pricing as well of the Libra color. But there's also, Kobo also has other models that can take stylus input too. I think there's the, I think the larger one that they have is the Ellipsa, but has not been updated in quite a bit. Sage, they have a Sage and an Ellipsa. So that I believe both can take stylus input. So you're not only limited to the Libra color, that's just the newest one and it has the color e-paper display. But the one thing that struck me when I was using the original Scribe and then also working with some of the Kobo devices that take stylus input is that with Kobo books, you can write on any book. Like that's what it came down to me, because I was like, you know, if I'm using this as an e-reader and I want to highlight, I want to circle, I want to underline, mm-hmm. I'm interacting with the book in a different way than just staring at the words, and I'm using the stylus. Personally, I know not everybody might feel this way, but personally, I want to interact with that page, you know, with the words on the screen rather than taking notes necessarily. And I'll get to that in a second, but I just want to be able to write on my book, you know, mm-hmm. like it's mimicking Monster. The... Yes, I want to be able to write on it. I want, like, it's mimicking a physical book with a physical pen or pencil, whatever. That's the way that I want to interact with my
content. Oh, so you don't like... So the big feature, I think, in the Kindle Scribe is that when
you go to... The active canvas?
Yeah, the active canvas, where you go and you want to write, and instead of just writing, scrawling on top of the letters that are already printed on the page, it creates a whole new section, pushes the print down, and does it. And Val is saying absolutely not.
All kinds of X signs.
No, because it's for me, that, and I want to be able to try that on the Scribe too. Like I'm really interested to see that in action. But in general, like with my experience from this original Scribe, it takes me out of it. Like if this is primarily an e-reader that can also do these other things, I'm using it primarily as an e-reader. So like that would take me out of the experience of actually reading the material. And like I want it to feel like a book, you know? Because I think that a lot of people just want the convenience of all of their content or the ability to choose from a library book or whatever Kindle book that they bought or Kobo book that they bought and dive right in. I don't want to be taken out of that experience of whatever story.
And you feel
or whatever,
that the active canvas takes you out.
Takes me out of that. Like, don't rearrange. And also that puts some, and Cher, you can probably speak to this a little bit more. Like, there's some, like, it's an e-paper display. Like, that's going to take a tiny second of, like, time for that to happen, right? Like, so you have to, like, pause, kind of wait for your, like, little box to show up, write what you want, and then, like, get back into things. Like, that would bother me a lot.
I'm going to explain.
It's fascinating.
I'm going to explain a little bit what I think, what I've observed, because I think I've managed to experience kind of both of the sides of the spectrum here, which is the active canvas you're talking about, Alex. In my experience with my Scribe 2, you would like try to write on the page, right? And then you'd wait a minute, and then a box will appear containing what you just wrote or drew. So I drew like a spiral shape or whatever, and then the box appears, and then you had to hit the check mark to solidify it, and then it will stay in place, and then all the words will jump around it. And then you can resize it and whatever. I think the reason this doesn't work as well or just doesn't feel great for some people the way Valentina's describing is because it doesn't feel at all like a real book in that way. A real book stays in place. A real book is static. And if you write over it, you understand that it was never going to move no matter. And real books don't have resizable font, right? The reason I see Amazon making Active Canvas behave the way it is because it needs to accommodate resizable fonts and like layouts that need to move. I think a good workaround, and I think this is what Kobo is doing, is that the writing basically happens, the books are static. And I think if you resize the font afterwards, according to Valentina on the Kobo, the circle stays in place and therefore is kind of wonky in that like it's not circling the exact part you circled before. And to be clear, Amazon...
Yes, and I was actually going to like check that out because I was just recharging my Kobo stylus before this call. And I wanted to double check that. But no, from when we checked while ago, Sharon, when we were like communicating on Slack about
in
this.
In October.
Yeah, like you can circle a word in a Kobo book and like you can resize it and the circle will stay basically around the word until it becomes so resized that it kind of expands past your circle kind of the diameter or whatever. So yeah, like that's kind of how it treats the whole, you know, writing on the book thing. So, you know?
I will say that like what I think like I said, I think that sounds kind of like they've found a way to make a PDF sort of version of the book. What I think Amazon should do to kind of mitigate this, if in future, years and years in the future, maybe with R&D, is that it should, it really needs to work on and invest in innovating in this write-on format like space. Because when I went to the Kindle store, which by the way was like weirdly buried into like the settings and my lists on the Kindle Scribe too, there is a category called write-on books. And from my interaction with it, my suspicion, I haven't confirmed this, is that these are basically PDFs. And that when you write on them, nothing jumps out of the way, nothing happens. You just, these were like Sudoku puzzles that I downloaded from the Kindle Unlimited library. There was a write-on book. And I just wrote on it. I just filled out the crossword, for example, right, on the page. And it'll stay there. And it was beautiful. It was marvelous. The problem with that is when I read through the available, like the catalog, I saw things that I wanted to download, like interactive daily planners, right? Hyperlinked interactive planners. None of them had very good reviews. A lot of them were saying things like, this linking doesn't work at all. It's not actually interactive. It's not going to sync with my phone.
Okay, so you know what the trick is.
What is?
The trick is you go to Etsy and you buy people. No, this is great. I
understand.
There's like this whole market
yes.
of people who make pretty yes. PDFs on Etsy. It really is cool. You just go and you're like, I want to get a new daily planner. And I go and I spend $3 on Etsy and I can have it on my Remarkable. I can have it on my Kindle. You can have it on these different things because it's just PDF. And you can do all the markup you want on it, like normal.
I just pulled out Libra color here.
That is my daily reader.
It's a bit smaller than the Scribe, yes. right? It's like a...
It is, yes. It's an e-reader screen. But also, I will, just to the PDF discussion, when you highlight in any book, like this is a book that I bought from the Kobo store, if you highlight it, it does snap to the text. So it's not exactly like on a PDF. If it was just a PDF, it wouldn't snap to the text. But if you're circling something, it's going to do it freehand as if it was a PDF. So I think that's interesting because they do treat highlights like a little bit special on Kobo. Like
Amazon
does
that too.
You know? Yeah. So it is not, it's not exactly like, oh, this is just a PDF that you can scribble over. Gotcha. At least with the highlights, you have some, it's a little bit more,
it's a format.
There's some logic there, you know?
It's Amazon showing that it's in the software space in a way that Amazon historically isn't. Because like, I will say, using it, I detest marginalia, no offense to Val. I do not believe in writing in books, but we're all editors here, and we all know, we all fully believe in writing in people's text when it's horrible.
Red
and
ink.
Using
Give
it, I was
ink.
Like, oh, if I could use this to like mark up a story I was editing. Like the Active Canvas feature is awesome for that. The way marginalia works on the Kindle Scribe feels like, oh, this would be a good productivity tool for me in an office if the workflow was around Amazon Kindle books, which is not real.
None of it.
But I can see the vision.
I was gonna say, Alex, I love that sentiment. I love the thought. But I'm never going to do that when I have Google Docs.
Yeah, Google Docs is so much better.
At my disposal.
Yeah,
like,
no.
It's just, you know.
Right. And it was like, this is one of those things where it's like, oh, if I've got to be editing like a 3,000 word investigative feature where it's going to take me like a couple of times going through that story, right? This is a great way to edit that. And I could see it as this productivity tool. I could see Amazon thinking about this product as a productivity tool rather than as exclusively a reading device, which to Val's point, like the Kobo Libra Color is awesome. That's my daily reader. It's Val's daily reader. I think
it's also, by the way, I checked the price for you, Valentina, the 32 gig model originally is $220 and it's now going for $200 on Target.
But the pen costs you more. Yeah. So you do, there's an extra cost if you want the pen for the Libra. So.
But you don't need it because you can just use the thing to read and it's great. And people should. Like, I think the Kobo Libra Color is dollar for dollar the best e-reader you can get right now.
Oh, crap. Wow. Okay. You heard
I love it. I love reading on it.
I probably agree with that.
And
I also love a physical page turn button.
Me too.
Why,
oh, my
I
goodness.
Do,
so. It's just, it gives you something. And does Kobo still have so much to do on software? Yes. Is its software experience awful? Yes. Is Amazon's software experience almost as bad? Yes. The only part of Amazon's software experience that I actually liked was the new stuff around Active Canvas and marking up.
So, okay.
Everything else, like the store itself, I'm like, you're terrible and I hate you.
Yeah.
Like, despite as I scroll through the Kindle store.
I am so angry about, like, how some of my books just refuse to upload sometimes on, like, they don't sync very well across my phone and I'm 7,000 Kindles at this point. But, Alex, I do want to point out, you say marginalia a lot. There is a feature, the collapsible margin, that is not yet ready for us to test. And so that one is, I think, what you're talking about. You know, people who like to write notes on books in a way that's different from your workflow. I think that that might be a good, like, workaround because you still get to...
Yeah, because it just... Yeah. Pops up
and then disappears. Like, yeah,
I've gotten to play with it a little bit, and it just pops up that margin on the side, yeah. And you start writing, right?
Yeah,
and I think it does it well. Again, I don't believe in writing in books. My mom's a librarian somewhere. She's very angry that we're talking about writing in books so much.
How about folding down the pages?
I write in my own books.
Yeah, dog earring.
I write in my own books. I would never write in somebody else's.
Oh, I don't believe in any books. I'm just like, we don't write in books. We write our notes.
Does it hurt when a book drops from a bookshelf for you?
No.
Okay.
That's another interesting point, though, Alex.
Yeah.
Because I was also thinking about that, where I was trying to put myself back into like college times or times when I was researching or studying or something. And like, there's so many things that I wish I had in college as a student or something that I never had that people have now, which is great for them. But I was thinking like, when I was studying, I would want to have the material in front mm-hmm. of me and then my notes also in front of me, like next to me. And I feel like it's not easy to do that on really any of the Kobo devices that have stylus input or like a Scribe. I feel, and maybe the Scribe gets closer to that because it's like within the same viewport, you know?
Yeah, I think the Scribe.
But to me, I'm just like, I would not want it to, like, if I need to see this entire page and then the little Active Canvas takes up like a fourth of it, then that kind of defeats the purpose of me actually looking at the material and then what I had to say about it, if that makes sense.
That was the same thing I was thinking about when I was using the Active Canvas, was like, oh, remember when I was in college and I never took any notes and I should have? This would have been awesome to actually take notes.
It wouldn't have
with.
Helped you, Alex. I'm sorry.
It wouldn't have helped me, but I would have told everybody for a whole week at school mm-hmm. that I was going to use it to take mm-hmm. notes and then mm-hmm. never do it. It does it well. Like, I think the Active Canvas, you can kind of move them around, right? Like, you can take
yes.
those notes and kind of move them around. And they're resizable. And so you can have those opportunities. And they're collapsible. So you can have those moments where you're like, okay, I want to look. Oh, the Active Canvas is hiding this other text that I want to see. And I can quickly hide it and look at it. Or move that Active Canvas up and see all the text I want to see. And there's that flexibility that I just don't see very often in an e-reader, that flexibility of text and the moving of text that felt very computer-like and in a kind of interesting way to me. That's what I found really interesting about the Scribe, was it felt computer-like and you could really see, okay, this
That's
is coming
panos.
From like, yeah, you can see panos. You can see, okay, somebody here has definitely worked on an iPad or a Surface device before and is bringing it into a different space. And I liked it. I don't know how to take notes, but if I did, it'd be nice.
I want to circle back to my speculation about what Amazon needs to do in this space, because I think we're all in agreement right now that there are things the Scribe can do better than the others, and there are things that it's not as good as the competition at. I think, like you both said, the Kobo option might be one of the better ones out there, depending on the shopper's needs. I want to speculate about what Amazon can do now with Panos at its helm of hardware and actually software, probably. The thing you talked about with Etsy, people making those backgrounds for your e-books. So
yeah, you use PDFs.
Right, the PDFs. So the Scribe has a version of that, right? Every notebook comes with this variety of backgrounds. You can choose the music sheet. You can choose the one that's a daily planner, the one that's a calendar, and make as many of these. Like, the pages are infinite in every notebook. So you could, and I can, but what I really want, and I am just dreaming now, is like, I will write on this, and tell me if this product already exists, please. I will write like in the calendar view, like, December 15th, brother's birthday, right? And then, like, it'll send to my phone calendar and be, like, alarm.
Well, I think someone from Microsoft just is going to slowly rise up behind you and be like, with the power of the Surface and Windows combined.
Okay, but e-ink.
E-ink, no. Right? Like you could maybe try to do something hammy with some Android apps right. on a books device. Right. But otherwise, you're really not going to do that. And that, I think that's the real weakness of the scribe in a world where everybody has so vertically integrated
yes.
their workflows. You don't have those like when a cool tool comes along like this, it's hard to incorporate in your workflow because your workflow is so Apple dependent or so Microsoft or Google.
Whatever dependent. It is, internet dependent.
Yeah. And
well, that's also why I was kind of disappointed with the scribe, with how you can share, you can speak to this. Viewing your notes in other places, like God, you can just view them. Like
you can't edit them.
You can't really interact with them.
Yeah. And to be fair, Remarkable, you can't really interact. Like, I will take all the notes in the Remarkable, and the fact that I can't then just change them on my
right.
phone is
right.
absolutely stupid and annoying.
Exactly.
Yeah, none of them can really do that. And, you know, they could get there one day. I'm sure Amazon is going to point at AI.
I specifically told
Panos
about this.
Everything.
And he like winked at me. He was like, all right, we'll think about it. And I'm like, all right. All right, it's coming.
Yeah, I think that's why I do think that is probably part of his plan. Like seeing this device, I see that part of his vision is to turn these into productivity tools, not simply content consumption tools. Because that's all Amazon's considered these things for years. They haven't updated a single damn thing about the reading experience or right. about the purchasing experience in a decade. Barely, right? Like somebody out there is like, well, actually last year they did a brief update that let me buy a book a slightly different way. But no, that like real measurable changes haven't happened. And that's because all they figured out a way to like get you to buy the books. They found their way to maximize your purchasing of books and not care about the rest of the stuff. And at some point they have to care about the rest of it. They have to care about the reading experience. They have to care about the other parts of reading besides purchasing the book and having it on your Kindle. And here we're starting to see that. We're starting to see, okay, they're caring about something. They're caring about productivity. And I would love for them to do what Kobo does. And is like, you see their CEO is on Threads. Mm. That man loves Threads. He adores Threads and I adore him for it. He like, it's just on my timeline constantly. But he is trying to make that a better e-reading experience. I mean, he's not successful either. Kobo is still invested in like, making sure you buy books from them. They all are because all of these companies own the bookstore and the device.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, like, they're never going to get better mm-hmm. at that.
What was the Barnes & Noble device name?
Well, don't.
The Nook.
Nook, thank you.
Nook, yeah. But don't you think, Alex, to your point about the Kindle getting, like, better software, more robust software, would you say that, like, because I would think as you were saying that, I was like, well, isn't the path to least resistance in that area, wouldn't it be Android? And if that's the case, then why haven't they done that with the Fire tablets?
They're not going to do it because they don't want to do it because one, have you guys looked at like Amazon like user experience for people outside of the Amazon store? Like think about it. Think about using Amazon products. They're not meant for normal people to just interact with. Amazon's actually really bad at software.
I know
we just had a review of Jeff on our team. HD8, Jeff Dunn just did a review of the Fire HD 8 tablet. The renewed version just came out recently. Yeah. And his biggest gripe was with the software because the most store, of it is, you know, ad bloated and trying to get you to interact with Amazon services, interact with Prime Video, buy something from Amazon. It's a very shopping focused.
And, you know, and crucially, I believe Amazon's like the Kindle software team, the teams handling the software for this stuff are not the same teams handling the hardware for the most part. And so they'll be like, that's not their job. And the software people, I hope they're under Panos. I'm not entirely sure if they are.
I would
they
bet should he can be. Have all kinds of power over them, though. So
yeah, they should be because there's a major misstep there. And it is really clear that their software is entirely about how can we be a race to the bottom? How can we be the cheapest? How can we do as little work as possible and maximize conversion of people buying books? That's all, and it's so clear that that's all it cares about. Because otherwise, Goodreads, which is like the biggest repository for book fans in the world to go figure out their books and talk about their books, owned by Amazon, would not integrated into the Kindle Scribe and all the other Kindle products, would not be the shit show it is. that has not been touched software-wise in over a decade. Sorry, I just get really, really mad about all of how lazy these companies are about these products and the service of selling books.
That's why we have you on here, because, you know, we're all very excited about books. I mean, the two of you more than me, but I think I have a fantasy in mind of the perfect notebook, and I'm sure whoever's listening to this episode does too. So I want to encourage you, if you have thoughts on the Kindle Scribe or whatever fantasy digital notebook combo device desires you have, send them to podcast@engadget.com. We would love to hear from you. But clearly, I think it's a mixed bag. I think that's what we're coming down to with the Kindle Scribe. I think if you're getting this for yourself or someone that's like invested or has an Amazon account, right, somehow in the Amazon ecosystem, I think it's a like decent purchase. I think it does the things it says it does well. I still don't like that pens are magnetically attached to edges so precariously, but there's no real other way other than buying a case to contain all of it. I don't know of any other.
I mean, they could do a case like the Remarkable Paper Pro, which attaches the pen magnetically, the but then has a latch that goes over it.
Similar to, I think, the Samsung Galaxy tablets case. Like, a lot of tablet makers do this. They use the magnets to attach the pen, and then they make you a case.
The Remarkable magnets are pretty strong, too, from what I remember. I never had it, just, like, drop on
me. Paper Pro still, hands down, the best keyboard case.
Oh, I can't wait to.
I've used on any device.
Alex, I'm coming over tomorrow. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then Valentine, I'll see you this weekend. I'll bring the Kindle Scribe to you.
Right.
Or next weekend at the very latest. No, what I'm trying to get to is there's a lot we're hoping to see in future for the Kindle Scribe and the rest of the space. But for right now, I think obviously the shopping decision boils down to like what your needs are, right? Number one, if you're already in Amazon, the Kindle Scribe is kind of a no-brainer. But for the two of you who are like such experts in everything else, what would you recommend people get and why? So let's, Valentina, you go first.
I was just thinking, we really need like a decision tree.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Do it. Yeah.
Truly.
I agree.
We need a decision tree for e-ink or e-paper devices in general. Because I would start with, what do you primarily do more? Do you read more or do you write more? Because then that, depending on what you choose, it's going to be very different. I think when we're talking about the Scribe, to your point, I think with the point that Alex was making a little bit earlier, is like the Scribe is great for reading as well as marking up and writing notes about the things that you're reading. If you do that kind of like tangentially, I mean, maybe it's not something you do all the time, but it's something that you want the ability to do, but still your primary concern is like all that reading content, you know, like you live within the Kindle ecosystem. You have a bunch of, I lovingly call my Kindle graveyard, you know, where I have all of the Kindle books that I've bought, you know, and have not gotten to yet. So like if you have a bunch of content there, and it's also quite easy to get library books onto Kindles as it is with Kobo, like, you know, if you live within the Kindle ecosystem and you're still primarily reading and then sometimes writing and taking notes and marking things up, then the Scribe sounds like it would be a good proposition for you. Personally, I think that Kobo is definitely caught up with, like, at least the book, the book library options that you have. Also, the OverDrive integration is one of my favorite things about Kobo.
It's not perfect, though, because you can only use one library card at a time.
Correct.
Sorry.
Correct. That's true. That is my biggest, if you look on Engadget.com, anything that I write about Kobo, I'm like, that is my biggest gripe about the OverDrive integration. Give me multiple library cards, and I will never complain about it again.
CEO, I bitched about this, and some other people have been bitching about this on Threads.
Yes, you have.
And he did say, we're looking into it.
Yeah.
We do maybe truly need to think about
can you link Valentina's piece? Because like Valentina just is not on social and like doesn't, you two have been saying the same thing either to me, Valentina, or in your articles. And Alex, I've seen your thoughts on Threads. And I'm like, these two are talking the same thing. They need to talk to each other.
And also, I mean, the Scribe doesn't really have this issue to my understanding, but, you know, with Kindles in general, you do have to deal with the lock screen ads. So I think if you don't want to deal with Scribe you don't have, but I just like the fact that's not even a thing on the Kobo devices. Like, yeah, you get recommendations and whatnot, but your book cover that you're reading is going to be the cover of your on the screen when you put the thing to sleep when you're done for the evening. So I personally probably like Alex is saying, I have a Libra Color and a Libra 2, just the black and white previous version, and I go back and forth between those all the time. I personally prefer them.
Alex?
Yeah, I kind of agree with Val. I think if you're really, if you don't know what you want a big screen, right? You want a big 10.3-inch screen. I think there's nothing better than the Scribe. If you're just thinking, I need big screen, this is for all my baby boomers in the audience, all my folks who are thinking about how they need some readers, it's great. It's expensive, but it's great for that. And I think if you are one of those people who likes to write, but you mainly like to read, this is the thing. The paper Remarkables products are perfect, wonderful devices, exclusively for writing. Do not get them to read. Mm. And then to Val's point, for like my daily reads, I use the Kobo Libre Color. It works really, really well. I think there's some major issues with the overdrive. In addition, like Val, do you ever find that it just makes the same book, copies the same book like four times into your library if it's from overdrive?
Not four times, but I definitely had it happen twice. Like I'll see it like two times, but not all the time. That's happened maybe like once or twice.
Sometimes it's like a spicy book. Huh. And then it's like, it's telling on me. And I'm like, I don't, let me live my life, Kobo. I think it's great. And then like I've got a Books Palma. I use that. I plug that into my COS Porta Pros and go on walks with that. So that I can just be completely offline and read if I want and listen to music if I want and just do all of that. I think that's a great product as well. The Palma too seems to be nice. It's the same thing with a thumbprint reader. But yeah, it really is. What are you? If you just want to read, if you're just looking to read, go get a Kobo. Also, they don't put DRM on their books, which rules. So it's super easy to move your library off of Kobo.
That's what I like about that. Gosh, I used to have a, what is it called? The
Who knew we were all Kobo fangirls here?
I know.
I love it.
I have a Kobo.
Nice surprise. Nice surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah, but nobody uses it because everybody's already bought all their books on Amazon. It's a super hassle to move all your products over.
Well, I used to download .mobis and I guess also .epubs, but just mostly .mobis. And I would drop them in that. What's that app on desktop that you can?
Calibre.
Thank you. Calibre, right? No,
Calibre works beautifully, but is that how you say it? Have I been saying it wrong?
Calibre is how the word is, and then Calibre is if you're thinking of the
Kobo. I truly don't know. I've always said Calibre, but I don't know.
I've said Calibre?
I don't know. Whatever that is, C-A-L-I-B-R-E. It's a great product. It works really, really well. But 90% of people, when you say, oh, you want to move your library over, first you're going to need to download this open source software, they've hung up on you.
They will never do
it. They will never do it.
Most people will not. I mean, shout out to like the Kindle and Kobo subreddits who like know lots about this.
And mobile read forums. Mobile read forums is another great place to check out.
If you're interested in really getting into your e-readers even more, if you are one of the few people who actually want to do that, you've got plenty of resources. But yeah, to Alex's point, most people are not going to go through the extra steps to kind of make that transition. For most people, it's the path to least resistance.
Even the shortcut of send to your Kindle, that email address thing, like getting anyone that's not at least a little bit tech savvy to do that, and that's like one of the most simple things you can do, in my opinion, is already like a struggle for a lot of people. So I understand. So, okay, what I'm going to wrap up this section with is just to say our review in progress is up. I've covered a lot of other things we didn't really get around to talking about, like the general like design and the weight and whatnot, but also battery life. I think that's, as an e-ink tablet, it's got obviously like weeks of battery life versus like the typical 1 week or like max for your typical tablet that's like an LCD or OLED. And like I will also shout out that if you want to read but you don't want to get like a dedicated tablet for it, you can always use a Kindle app or whatever other app on your iPad or your iPhone or Android tablets or phones. So there's also all sorts of options there. And hey, if you enjoyed our conversation and want to be a part of it, you can always send us your thoughts, podcast@engadget.com. I will make sure your fan mail gets to Alex. I'll make sure your questions about books and like the best shopping advice and also fan mail go to Valentina as well. Thank you for joining us today, both of you, especially you, Valentina, because Alex is going to continue on the rest of the episode with me. But I know you're like the most busy person I know, Valentina. So thanks for taking time to talk to us today.
Thank you for having me. One of my favorite subjects to talk about, e-paper tablets of all shapes and sizes. It was wonderful to see Alex and talk about
this. I know, it was nice.
Yes, I have a million meetings today, so unfortunately I have to leave. So,
well, where can people find you? I know you're not on social media. If anyone wants to, like,
I'm not on social. You can find me at Engadget.com. Please go look at all of our buying advice, all of our best lists and buying guides. I will say, for people who are interested in this conversation, I am currently testing out the Supernote A6 X2 Nomad e-ink tablet and the Onyx Books Note Air 4C, some of the newest ones from Books and
Supernote. How's the Note Air? Are you allowed to say anything?
I literally, because of Black Friday, I have just plugged it in today. So I am testing that out. I have had a little bit more time with the Supernote. But yeah, I will be testing those out to see if they should be included in our e-ink tablet guide.
Yes.
So look for that to be updated relatively soon at Engadget.
Yay! Moving on to some other news, Alex, I just asked you this, but I'll ask you this again. Have you been paying attention to what's been going on with Intel?
Yes, I have. I think it's pretty hard to ignore this week. And this has been a big news week. But Intel CEO Pat Gelsinger is leaving. He's announced that he's retiring. People are shocked and horrified. And I want to say to all of you, where have you been?
I know.
Like, this guy came in at the last minute. The previous CEO, the last CEO, like the last full CEO, not interim CEO, left because there was some weird impropriety with various women at the company. And then they had, like, the CFO was CEO for a minute, and then they brought Pat in, and everybody's like, yay, Pat's going to save the day because he's very, very smart processor guy. And Intel's problem is that it has been way behind everybody else on processors. And he's done, I think, a pretty solid job turning that around and really courting the United States government to get money for fabs here in the United States. Like he's been doing the thing. And then one day he said, you know what? I'm old and I want to retire.
And that's normal.
And I'm like, that's normal, guys. Like, yes, I'm sure people are shocked. I'm sure everybody was really hoping he would stay on so that the stock price can be stabilized and everybody's 401ks can look happier. But sometimes things happen and people just are like, you know what? I want to sit on my couch and drink coffee in the morning.
Who's still holding on to Intel stuff? Anyway, I personally know some people just in my personal life circles, my real friends, not my digital fake friends, who have worked at Intel and have taken like the buyout packages. They're not supposed to say anything publicly, but I can. And yeah, man, this impropriety. So Gelsinger came in 2021 to replace Bob Swan. And
yes,
but
Bob Swan, who was the CFO,
right?
And he was an interim CEO. And
right. It was only for 2 years that he was the title of CEO. Yeah. And then and Pat Gelsinger himself has, like, through various stints, helped, like, about spent over 40 years at the company and, like, was 4 years as CEO. Yeah, and so
he built, like, the first 8x86 processor.
Right. Exactly.
Like, he created the 486 in 1989. He still apparently wears, like, a little pin. Like, he wears the 486 on, like, a little pin. And people were really excited about him when he came on because he, I think Sean Hollister said it at The Verge, he bled Intel. He'd been there for decades. Yeah. He'd left, but he knew the company, he knew the people, and he knew what needed to be done, which was Intel at the time was a shit show. And they were way behind everybody else. AMD had just absolutely lapped them thanks to their processors and the ability, the way that they could have their processors, like, they could just slap more processors together and make more powerful things. Because they had Infinity Fabric. And so they could do really cool stuff with this Infinity Fabric and make really big processors. And that allowed them to scale really, really quickly. And then you had Apple over in the corner being like, we have a whole different philosophy on processors and processor speed. Yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah.
And Intel was just sitting there
twiddling thumbs,
holding a piece of their anatomy, being like, what do we do? and they figured it out. Finally, they're like, we're going to hire Pat Gelsinger. We're going to look at these different philosophies of processor power, and we're going to adapt them, and we're going to use them, and we're going to incorporate them. We're going to, you know, they launched new GPUs under Intel, discrete GPUs, which was the first.
Was it the Xeons?
It was the
Iris.
The Arc.
Iris is integrated. Quark?
No, it's Arc.
Arc might be, yes. In fact, speaking of the Arc, this is literally on my list of things to talk about. Intel actually this week announced budget Battle Mage Arc GPUs.
Yeah. With some AI crap in them that may or may not work. I'm sorry for saying AI crap, but we need to just acknowledge that 90% of the AI stuff in the world is crap.
It is crap.
Gelsinger, like, he had a really hard job. He had to go in and turn this company around. And that was, I think everybody knew, was going to be a multi-year project. That's not something that can be done in a day.
Yeah.
And it's not done yet, you know? He's leaving the work unfinished.
I think
he's put the company, like, he's put them in a better place. Like, he's leaving the company in a better place than it was when he came in, for sure.
Yeah.
But I would say, particularly with potential trade wars in China and stuff, the processor space is at its most complex, most difficult that it's been in decades. Yeah. It's a really hard place to be.
Yeah.
And the dude just said, yeah, I'm done. And it's like, okay, good for you, man. I enjoy your retirement. He's don't have tired. Intel stock, so I'm like, good for you, man.
I agree. So I will take this moment to point out a few things. Number one is that in Pat Gelsinger's absence, the next CEO of Intel Products, Michelle Johnston Holthes, I think is how you pronounce their last name, as well as David Zinsner, who's the executive vice president and CFO, they will serve as interim co-CEOs of Intel. My personal take is that I have not a lot of hope for Intel, even though they are a huge company, right? And I don't know how they're going to climb out of this hole. I also wanted to point out that some of the news around the Battlemage Arc GPU that was announced this week, Devendra covered it for us. It's a $250 GPU, Arc B580. And according to Intel, it's faster than NVIDIA's RTX 4060. So that's a bold claim. The RTX 4060 goes for $299, so $300. So about $50 cheaper is where the ARC.
And this is the same kind of strategy AMD used when it was trying to get back into GPUs in the mid 2010s, right? Where it just says, "Hey, we're gonna be cheaper. We're gonna cut our costs and provide more power." And I think I have no doubt that Intel's done it. I think it'll probably be just a perfectly fine CPU, but I play a Steam Deck, so I don't care personally.
Sorry for all
the fans out there who are actually PC gamers. You're all wonderful people. I'm sure Engadget is going to have all sorts of really important thoughts about this product.
We sure do. The Intel Arc GPUs we just talked about, they're actually going to be able to be available mid-December, which is pretty soon. I will say that the you bringing up the Steam Deck is a very reminiscent of something else that happened this week. MSI unveiled the new Claw gaming handhelds. They have Lunar Lake processors as well as some quote AI. Remember we said AI crap is everywhere. Yeah, it's also. Yeah,
I was specifically thinking of that when I said that.
Yes, because
MSI the Claw is a cool product.
Yeah, is the MSI Claw 8 AI Plus and the Claw 7 AI Plus? Which, by the way, I was confused. I was like, they're in their 8th generation. No, these refer to the screen sizes because the Claw is only in the second gen as of this announcement. Pretty sure. Have you used the Claw?
This is the second generation. I've played with the Claw, I've played with a lot of the other Windows Steam Deck clones.
Right.
And the thing they all have in common is that they're Windows Steam Deck clones.
Right.
And nobody has quite it's like using a books product. Like, you really need to be a nerd to enjoy it. I would not get it for I wouldn't even get it for my brother because he would just be calling me all the time being like,
"How do I
Alex,
do this?
It's not working right.
How do I do
That's
this?
How he talks.
Yeah. I know.
Shout out to your brother if he's listening.
Yeah. Hey Peter, what's up? But no, I'm excited. I love that we're getting this huge explosion of people trying new gaming consoles and building these Windows devices. I think it's really, really awesome. I think either Windows or one of these companies needs to be more serious about that interaction, because you know what's a terrible way to navigate Windows?
God, joystick.
Yeah, video game controller. And that's what you have to do with these.
Yes,
and
exactly.
There's no way around that.
Well,
I
don't know if these are touchscreen. Do you know if these are touchscreen specifically? Like the Claw,
they should be.
Yeah. So touchscreen's fine. Like, remember, we've shat on Windows as a system for being very not touch friendly to begin with.
Yes.
So already that's bad.
But 7-inch touchscreen.
God.
Using Windows on a 7-inch mm-hmm. touchscreen, mm-hmm. and usually because Windows will come installed and it will be tiny,
It's so bad. It's so small. Yeah.
Yeah. You can't see the font. Like, I got to put on reading glasses to look at it. And like, don't make me feel old. But they're good products. I think they are fun. Yeah. What MSI is doing here is really pushing things. You know, this is going to be faster than a Steam Deck for sure. Right. Just hands down, it will be faster. And Steam Deck, I think, has got at least another year before it releases a faster product. But it is definitely for the tinkerers and the crowd. It is not for the people who just want to sit down and get to gaming.
So just to quickly point out the specs here, the Claw 8 and Claw 7 AI Plus, they have like full HD plus displays. So the 7-inch is a 1920 by 1080. The 8-inch is a 1920 by 1200. They both refresh at 120 hertz, but they are LCD screens. They're not OLEDs like the Valve and Lenovo versions of these handheld gaming PCs. Both of them have like fairly decent sized batteries. I don't know what the sort of battery life claims are, but they use MSI's Cooler Boost Hyperflow Tech. So they have dual fans and heat pipes basically to keep them running cool. And then also each have a pair of Thunderbolt 4 ports. So not only can you charge, but also I guess have accessories or like controllers. And then there's some redesigning in the joysticks, bumpers, D-pad, and triggers. The new ones, these new MSI Claws, have Hall Effect in their triggers in addition to just the
Hell
sticks,
yeah.
Which is good, yeah. Well,
yeah, no, Hall Effect is great because most joysticks have drift, and Hall Effect joysticks are much more popular now.
Now they have them in the triggers.
You don't have drift. Yeah. So, you know, the original MSI Claw was not looked on fondly by people. People, I know, were excited about it because MSI is good at making gaming PCs. And so I was like, surely they will make a cool handheld. It's hard to do. And that was really obvious with the original Claw. And this one is, you know, I think MSI's philosophy on this is like, let's just be fast. Everybody else is going to have all these other things they can do. We can be the fast ones.
Right, right.
And I think that's a very valid strategy, but also these are mobile handheld gaming devices. And being fastest means that it's also going to have terrible battery life.
Yeah.
The new one could be better. We'll see. Hopefully it's going to have better battery life, but
we don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
We'll see how it does with the Lunar Lake. To your point, these things arrive December 25th, starting at $800 for the 7-inch one and $900 for the 8 AI Plus. So yeah, and if you want to know what our thoughts were on the original Claw, you can check out Sam Rutherford's review. Sam's also a friend of me, Alex, Valentina, and
I'm aware of Sam.
I know you are.
Sam knows what he's
done.
We
just saw Sam fairly recently. Okay. Yeah, no, so that's the MSI Claw, which was like I said, the 8 and 7 AI Plus were announced this week. And you know what else was unveiled this week? This is funny.
What?
Okay, Alex, I'm so excited. I wonder if we can talk about your love for cars and your car troubles recently on the podcast. But
before we can talk about my exploding tire.
We have to. But did you see this week Jaguar unveiled like the design of its concept EV? With the most hyperbolic, like, press release ever. Did you see these pictures?
I'm looking at these pictures.
Okay, everybody. So,
did Joni Ive make this car?
Joni Ive on trucks?
I mean, well, no, it's got a steering wheel, so he didn't make it.
Did he?
This looks not great.
It's just, so we're getting your live reaction to these pictures.
Yeah, okay. You're getting my live reaction. So to describe it, guys, it like the outside from a distance, it looks kind of cool. It's got like some nice lines to it. You know, it's like got that classic like 1930s coupe vibe. And then you're like, wait, no, that looks all like this is just digital art. This yes. is just a render. This is very clearly a render. This doesn't make
There's
sense.
There's zero and then texture you look, on
the
any
inside.
Of this. Yeah.
The inside of this car, it's got a steering wheel.
I just saw
it's got a big
picture.
Bar between the driver and the passenger seat, presumably to kill someone. And that's it. That's all it's got. It's got a lot of like wood finish because it's a Jag, and Jag's got to have like a wood finish because nice. That's it. That's it. I'm like,
There's no back window either. There's no rear window. Rear view. Yeah. Rear window. Yeah. And also, by the way, like there's this thing looks like the bar that you're describing, Alex. It looks like they stuck two canoes inside the car next to each other.
All I can see is like No, that's just like a decapitation bar. Like that is just, it's not real. And let's be really clear, guys. This car will never move past this stage.
Yeah.
If this car moves past this stage, surely I will come on this show.
Yes.
I will make a formal apology to Black Bar.
Oh, actually, and I cannot wait.
I don't know. I will consume something awful of your choosing. But I'm quite serious. I will never have to do that because this is just not real.
We will force you to use some kind of bad inked device for apology. Yeah. Yeah. to just kind of give everyone some background to what's been happening in Jaguar land lately, that in the lead up to this, right? Last week, the company announced it had ditched its Roaring Cat logo in favor of a sort of like Bauhaus style minimalist logo. And apparently the public was like, no, what?
Because we like the cat. It looks cool.
I thought it matched their vibe.
You got to have the little jaguar on the front of the car, like the hood ornament. Otherwise, like, what is the point of having a jag?
It immediately tells you what money. It is too, right?
Like, yeah.
Oh my God.
I pay for the hood ornament. I don't own a jaguar, but if you own one, you want it for that hood ornament.
I will say, even Elon Musk responded about the logo. Do you sell cars? Like, the car logo just doesn't even indicate anything. Anyway, so Jaguar this week with these renders basically calls it their Type 00 concept car and was like, oh, I don't know. A lot about their press release language read very defensive to me.
A travertine stone plinth is what they're calling that decapitation device in between the driver and passenger seat.
Maybe
not decapitation, but certainly like parts of your body will not be connected to you if you're in an accident while in this car.
Yep. Not the safest car to be in. These are part of Jaguar's, quote, copy nothing ideology. And I'm like, you sure didn't copy safety. You sure?
There's like, actually,
some
things you should copy.
Yeah.
And this is like, everybody is out there looking at Tesla and being like, well, we got to reinvent the wheel. Tesla reinvented the wheel, so we got to do it too. And you haven't, guys. Like, all Tesla did was just do better software in cars. And make cheap electric cars.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do. Improve your software and make cheap electric cars.
Yeah. I've been in a Tesla SUV. That was a really strange experience.
And they're like, but what about if we did a travertine plinth? Would that entice you? No.
Those are two words I've not heard.
Travertine plinths and cars will – stone and cars will never entice people because it will just kill them.
Oh, God. Tell people about how your car got killed.
No, my car didn't get killed.
I know.
This last week, my tire did explode. And thus far – the guy who changed the tire, the guy who replaced the tire, Sherlyn, and many other people have not been able to figure out what happened to it. But it had a huge gouge in it. I posted it on Threads.
You did.
And Blue Sky and all of those places.
I will very quickly say that I was in the car when this happened, and it felt very strange to me. It felt like there was some kind of dragging, and then there was some kind of spoke that we found after the fact, Alex, right?
Yeah. No, your theory that like there was like a small tire for like a kid's push buggy.
Right.
What are those called?
Little tricycle, like a push cart, like a car, I don't know.
Like a tricycle or whatever.
Trike, yeah.
Little tiny tire and it had like a little piece of metal wire, and my best guess is maybe like that tire got stuck in my car, my wheel, and then the wire got somehow jammed into the tire and ripped it. But that was a flimsy wire, and it should not have done what it did to that very expensive tire. And that's why tire insurance apparently is good.
That's why safety is so important. That's why you don't stick plinths in the middle of your car, right?
Yeah, you don't want to do these things because then everything's just more expensive and horrible. And also, this is what I learned after this. I hit up a friend over at Mike Balaban over at CNN, and I was telling him about it. And I was like, can you believe I didn't have a full-size spare in the back of my car? And he said, that's actually the trend. And most car makers are not putting full-size spare tires in because it's too much weight. So instead, everybody's getting donuts or no spare at all.
Yeah.
And this is... I'm just here to rant. I'm so sorry to your Engadget audience.
No, it's We're here for the funny stories. We have a really nice community here. They're very sweet.
Okay.
They send us nice
emails. So I'm sorry to everyone. It was just, can you believe that they're bringing the donut back? Bring back full size spare tires. Yes. This is a pox upon our society.
Yeah. I will also point out that this happened like literally Thanksgiving Day, which was not great. Like why? Anyway, moving on to some happy ish stuff. Alex, do you have some sort of music streaming service you're subscribed to?
Apple Music is subscribed to because I have Verizon.
Oh, actually, I should look into that because I also have Verizon, which was a former parent company for Engadget, by the way. This week, all of them dropped their annual look back recaps, whatever you want to call it, right? Spotify Wrapped was yesterday. Before that, we had Apple's Music Replay. And then Amazon was like, we have one too. So Amazon Music, it's called Delivered, which is really funny. I don't know. Everybody's been doing these.
Oh, yeah. Mine is Replay. This is just going to be like you listen to a lot of classical music in Chapel Roan.
I love that. I love that for you.
I'm looking. It's saying this is my replay.
I will tell you what mine embarrassingly was. Well, okay.
Oh, excuse me. It's classical music and Beyonce is proud apparently what it's I listened to this year.
Very nice. You forced me to listen to some of this already, so I know what to expect. Okay. Really quickly, just to recap the news before we get to the fun stuff. I mean, for Spotify's Wrapped, I mean, this year they're actually involving AI more than they have. So, you know, there's an AI DJ in Spotify. Now your Wrapped will also include an AI hosted podcast to tell you about your listening habits, which, by the way, they're just telling me that you've listened to way too much Ariana Grande this year. And I'm like, y'all are messed up. And they also
it's so rude when it calls you out like that.
It is very rude. I feel very attacked. Was
the podcast like funny? Did they have jokes?
No, I mean, I've listened to AI DJ before and the voice is just kind of like whatever. Sometimes it makes cringe jokes. I didn't listen to my AI podcast about my listening habits because I saw that it was all Ariana Grande. Why do I want to listen to it tell me it's all Ariana Grande? And I have a bone to pick because this was probably data that was collated like only up until like a certain month this year. So maybe until November, like right before the layoffs. And so, like, a lot of more recent music by, say, Bruno Mars, Rosé, Lady Gaga didn't really make it into the data, right? That's why it was so heavily skewed, Ariana Grande. I'm defending myself, unfortunately.
I don't judge you. Look,
I judge me.
she's great and wicked. So yeah, I get it.
We'll talk about this in a little bit, I'm sure. But okay, the rest of Spotify is Wrapped. I'll just point out that the AI that they're using here is Google's Notebook LM, which everywhere, I think on the internet, we've seen people remark how capable it surprisingly is. So, I mean, if you're wondering how Spotify was able to deliver such realistic sounding AI podcast of your rap, that's because of Notebook LM. And then Apple's Music Replay was just here for y'all who are on Apple Music. And then Amazon's announced that it's called Amazon Music Delivered, which I just wanted to say because it's a funny, funny name for Amazon. So yeah, we know yours. Alex is Beyonce and theater, and mine is all, sadly, Ariana Grande. How about yours, dear listener? What are yours? And if you're not embarrassed or if you feel attacked, you send them to us. We will tell Spotify or Amazon or Apple for you that they were rude. You send us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com.
And just so you feel comfortable, I'm gonna list off some of my top albums by month. Apparently, my top album in January was the Star Trek Strange New Worlds musical.
I remember when you made me listen to that.
February was Wicked. March was Beyonce. April, Taylor.
Wait, were you listening to Beyonce Wicked before the movie? Like way before the movie?
Yeah. Apparently, I was listening to just the original soundtrack. Then it was Beyonce, Taylor, Beyonce. And then June, it was the Xena Warrior Princess musical.
God, of course. That is so you. That's so on brand.
This is so depressing.
It's not depressing, honey. I know you're Plex, and so this tracks, okay? I will say that I had my K-pop moment in August, apparently. So anyway, like I said, just make sure to send us your thoughts or your Spotify Wrapped to podcast@engadget.com. Moving on to a segment on this podcast we call Working On, where we just go over what the team is working on. I've been working on all kinds of stuff I don't know that I can talk about. I mean, a lot of CES planning all the time, really. And then I wanted to shout out some stuff that's going on around Engadget. So we talked about Intel's CEO retiring earlier in this show. Dan Cooper had a really good take on it quite quickly after the news. It's an article headlined, "Firing Pat Gelsinger Doesn't Solve Intel's Problems." Now, to be clear, I don't think he was fired.
I think there was a lot of concern when he first announced his, it was a really sudden departure.
Yeah.
And he's since come out and been like, oh, I'm retiring. And you know,
and I think
it is a big corporate departure, so it could, maybe he was fired, maybe he is retiring, maybe it's a bit of both.
Yeah. I will say that it also happened around the same time, like lots of layoffs were happening. And like I said, I knew people that were taking buyouts too. So I think it might be unclear whether he chose to leave and take a buyout or if he was let go for reasons unclear. Regardless, Dan's piece makes a very good case of what we kind of just talked about, but in a bit more detail, you know, about Intel's history and woes. This week, we also saw reviews from, obviously, myself, the Kindle Scribe 2, and Billy's Cambridge Audio Melomania P100 review. Now, Cambridge Audio is better known, I think, for some other devices in the home audio space. They've made wireless earbuds before, but this is their first wireless headphones. It's a very strange product name because it's Melomania, and everyone on our team was like, Melanoma? Melanoma P100 review? Anyway, it's if you've known of the brand Cambridge Audio and are interested in what their first wireless headphones sound like, look like, you can always check out that piece, that review by Billy.
Oh, they're pretty.
Yeah, they are. Okay. Speaking of pretty, Alex, this is the funnest, in my opinion, the most fun section or segment of our podcast. It is Pop Culture Picks. We just recommend something for our listeners to unwind to. Usually it's TV, film, book, audio, that sort of stuff. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I just went on the deepest of dives with this manga and anime called Dandadan.
Oh, yeah. Dan's talked about this. I feel like everyone's talked about this. Sam talked about this.
I'm fully on board. Dang. I totally understand it. But it also took me like 6 episodes to realize that it's a pretty traditional shonen anime. So it's, you know, a bunch of people fighting and then leveling up and fighting like they're in Dragon Ball Z. But this time, it's also got girls who do it and are actually interesting characters that are not constantly foisted to the side of the narrative. I'm looking at you, Naruto and Bleach, who they broke my heart in the 2000s. But yeah, so I'm doing that and St. Denis Medical on NBC/Peacock.
St. Denis Medical? That is random.
St. Denis Medical, it's from the same guy who made Superstore, and it stars Alison Tolman. And is about a bunch of people who just work at a small hospital. And some of them are assholes.
No, wait, Scrubs.
No, it's a comedy. It's comedy.
Scrubs.
But it really is about like, it's very like Superstore. And it's like, let's look at these people and how like this kind of sucks. This existence sort of sucks. But also let's find all the humor in it and show that these are human beings and nice people. It's lovely.
Yeah.
Highly recommend it. It's a really just heartwarming, funny show, and I've had a great time watching it.
I am shocked you didn't mention Wicked.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen it
and
twice.
Wicked. I've seen Wicked twice. I will be seeing it a third time, I think, when I get down to Texas. And if you're a musical fan, go see it. If you're not a musical fan, this isn't going to change your mind. I'm sorry that you don't like musicals.
I know who you're talking to with that.
But this won't change your mind. You hate joy and you can do better, but it's just wonderful. It's a wonderful, just old school musical. It probably feels like best musical I've seen since Chicago in 2002 for film. And
not Les Mis?
Certainly like the live action or the film version of Les Mis is terrible. So did you see how I like tensed up? I was ready to start.
You were like physical.
We go another hour on how bad Les Mis is. But yeah, Wicked's wonderful. Again, if you don't like musicals, you're not going to like this, and it's fine. You don't need to see it. But if you like musicals and you like joy, go see it. It's a fantastic time.
All right, I'm going to come in with the non-musical, non-comedy, non-anime.
Recommendations. Hit me with it. What are the recommendations for adults?
Two very dark and grim ones, actually. My first one is, I think, more obvious. I think I saw in theaters Gladiator 2.
Ooh, how is it?
I really enjoyed it. I really liked it. That said, I will tell you this much. I have loved watching Sparta on TV. And then going into Gladiator 2, I thought because of that I had seen the first Gladiator movie. And then only realized after the movie ended that I had never seen Gladiator, the original Russell Crowe one.
Did you feel confused?
I was very confused because I was like, didn't this guy already, like, you know what I mean? Like, I was like,
oh, you were confused because you thought this was like a sequel to Sparta?
Something like that. Yes. My brain subbed in Sparta for Gladiator.
Spartacus. Spartacus or Sparta?
Spartacus. I'm sorry. The TV, yeah. The Stars one? My God.
Yeah.
Spartacus, not Sparta.
Spartacus.
Sorry. Yeah, no, I was like, where's all the effing? Or, you know, where's all the...
Totally different. I mean, they're kind of the same in that they're both set in, like, the Roman Empire.
Yes.
And it's about people having to fight for their lives while being all sweaty and gorgeous.
Yes. And also, like, fighting for freedom and then also uprising. And then is a political story, on some levels as well. Anyway, Gladiator 2, I think, was very nice, very well acted. I really enjoyed the Pascal Mescal sort of situation. And it is, I think a lot of the critics had pointed out it was ultimately a very similar story to the original Gladiator movie. I did go back and watch the original movie. And I have to agree, but I think it is slightly fresher. And I just
was the action good?
The action was good. I really liked it. There was a lot of some gore, not a lot. But not
were there? Did they fight tigers?
They fought some animals, yes. And also, hell yeah. there was like this really okay. I don't know if it's a spoiler to say, but there was a rhinoceros.
Oh, that's cool.
That was super cool. The original, I think, now I'm still confused with all my different Roman era shows, but there was these crazy monkeys, right, in the original? No, oh no, crazy monkeys is in the new one. See, there you go. Anyway, just go watch it. All of it. It's all good.
She's like, just go, you know, if you're feeling down, just go watch something where people murder each other for sport and then fight for independence.
Exactly.
She's got one of three options for
it. It's beautiful. And then my second pick is on Netflix. It is this TV series, I'm not sure if you've heard of it, Alex, called Supercell.
I just added that to my watch list.
It's so good. Oh my God, you guys. It's so good. It's been a long time since I last saw a show that I couldn't stop watching. Like this one, I was like, it was 1 a.m. I was like, there's two more episodes. I can make this. I can do this. I can do this. I was like, I'm going to stay up and finish it. It is a show that's basically Heroes, but set in South London. And it is about these people who all start to find that they have powers. And it's, you know, the power set is similar to every superhero story out there. So you've got one person that's like the Flash, one person that can be invisible, one person that, you know, et cetera. The twist, I guess, if you want to call it that, I mean, this show's, like I said, set in South London and produced by a person called Rap Man, a producer called Rap Man. And it's basically a story about Black people discovering these powers. And that one of the similarities, and this is not a spoiler because it's in the show's description, is how there's some sickle cell history in all of their families, right? So it is, according to some of the reviews I read after, it really does a good job of like highlighting some of the violence, the knife violence that happens in South London and in certain communities, as well as the like impact of sickle cell in like African Black communities as well, right? Like it's they're just more susceptible and they're not being treated or not giving access to treatment, that sort of stuff. So it was really like not only a very good like social commentary, but also just a really nicely told story. I think you might get tired of it because it's the same tropes over and over of like discovery of your powers and then hunted down by like shadowy.
No, but it looks sick. Oh, like God. I saw the trailer for it and immediately added it to my list.
It's so cool. I really liked it and I finished it in 2 days. So if you're looking for something that is gritty but also a superhero story, check it out. It's on Netflix.
Or you can check out Dun Dun Dun.
So
is that how you say it? Did I say it right?
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. Alex, thank you for joining us today. Where can people find you online?
You can find me just about everywhere. I'm on Threads. I'm on Mastodon. I'm on Blue Sky. I'm maybe on TikTok if I can figure out how to get into my account again. But
what is your handle on those things?
Alex Kranz, one of those situations. Kranz isn't a common name. Type it in, you'll probably find me.
And that's C-R-A-N-Z.
I should spell my name. C-R-A-N-Z. I'm on all the places and posting a lot about all of my gadgets and just taking a minute to like disconnect from a lot of business news and focus really on like design and thinking about design and stuff.
I love that. Yeah. Well, if you want to find me, I'm not as much everywhere as Alex is, but I'm on some places. I'm on Threads. I'm on Blue Sky. On Threads, I am at Sherlinstagram. That's Sherlynstagram. And just Sherlyn at bsky. Or no, at sherlyn.bsky.social. And you can always email me, sherlyn@engadget.com. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on wherever you're listening. And subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Mm-hmm.